Motiversity family, it's Marcus Taylor, and I want to thank you for tuning in to the Motivation Daily Podcast by Motiversity, one of the top 50 podcasts in the world. If you enjoy listening to Motiversity and this podcast, you need to download the Mindset Daily Motivation app. On it, you'll gain access to thousands of motivational speeches, including Motiversity's and mine. And now, with the new Mindset Alarm feature, you can start each day with purpose, waking up to powerful audios like this one.
You may be average, you may be ordinary, but you have the opportunity every single day to make extraordinary decisions. And what you do today will determine your future.
To download Mindset, just go to mindsetapp.com or search for Mindset Daily Motivation on the Apple or Google Play Store and listen to motivational speeches while getting ready for the day. Click the link to download Mindset now and get ready to transform your life.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Attention, for example, is mediated by unconscious forces. And you know that perfectly well. You know, if you're sitting down to study, for example, your conscious intent is to study, but you know perfectly well that all sorts of distraction fantasies are going to enter the theater of your imagination nonstop and annoyingly, and there isn't really a lot you can do about that except maybe wait it out. You know, so you'll be sitting there reading and your attention will flicker away. You'll think about, I don't know, maybe you want to watch Jane the Virgin on Netflix or something like that. Or maybe it's time to have a peanut butter sandwich. Or you should get the dust bunnies out from underneath the bed. Or it's time to go outside and have a cigarette. Or maybe it's time for a cup of coffee. Or it's like all these subsystems in you that would like something aren't very happy just to sit there while you read this thing that you're actually bored by. And so they pop up and try to take control of your perceptions and your actions nonstop. Maybe you think, well, this is a stupid course anyways. Why do I have to read this damn paper? And what am I doing in university? And what's the point of life? It's like, well, you can really get going if you're trying to avoid doing your homework. And then you might think, well, what is it in you that's trying to avoid? Because after all, you took the damn course and you told yourself to sit down. Why don't you listen? Well, because you're a mess. That's basically why. You haven't got control over yourself at all.
I don't know how to start improving my life. Someone might say that. And I would say, well, you're not aiming low enough.
Regulate your habits. Try to get up at approximately the same time each morning. I would recommend that you get up approximately when other people get up. So that would be something in the neighborhood of 7:30 or 8 in the morning, or perhaps earlier, perhaps a little bit later. But you want to stabilize that because your circadian rhythms operate more, fluidly. And your mood is likely to be regulated better if there's islands of stability in your daily routines. Human beings like daily routines, just like dogs like daily routines. And so regulate your sleep, I would say when you get up in the morning, eat breakfast. That's a really important thing to do. I can't tell you how many people I've treated in my clinical practice whose proclivity for emotional instability and depression, anxiety, general hopelessness, emotional pain and gloom and doom, as well as capacity to concentrate, were properly regulated or inhibited or reduced by merely ensuring that they ate a protein and fat rich breakfast relatively soon after they wake up. And that's especially true if they're stressed. And as it turns out, that if you stress yourself after a fast, which is of course what you've undertaken if you haven't eaten since the night before, that your body produces enough insulin to deplete the sugar in your blood. And then it's very difficult for you to become regulated properly with regards to your metabolism until you sleep again. And so it can be regulating your sleep and your breakfast eating habits in particular can be in a very effective way of regulating your mood and increasing your capacity to concentrate. The other thing I would say is that scheduling your time is also extraordinarily useful. And so I can tell you a little bit about how to use schedules effectively. You should develop a long-term plan. So you have to set up your long-term vision. And then I would say, once you set up that vision so that you know how to orient yourself, then you should start designing your days. And you can do that very effectively with a calendar like Google Calendar. Many people say, well, I hate using a schedule or I hate using a calendar. What you're doing is using the calendar as an external tyrant that's telling you what you should do if you were going to be a conventionally good person each day. So you load yourself up with arbitrary responsibilities. But that's not really how you should use a schedule. What you should use a schedule to do is to design the day that you would most like to have. And obviously that's going to include accepting some responsibility and undertaking to make progress on those things that you have to make progress on to keep your life from collapsing into chaos. But it should also mean that you schedule in activities that make you actually want to have that day. And so if you're using a schedule properly, that it can be your friend. And that can also be something that can increase your capacity to concentrate. And then I would say, well, if you're very scattered, then you can start to train yourself. You might say, well, I need to learn to read without distraction. So maybe what you do, you say, okay, well, for the next week, I'm going to read 10 minutes a day, and I'm going to try to limit the distractions. And if you're successful at that, then you could try 12 minutes a day. And if you're successful at that, you could try 15 minutes a day. And the trick is to set a goal for yourself that is slightly beyond your current level of performance, enough to be challenging, enough to be worthwhile if you accomplished, but not so difficult that you're likely to fail. And then practice incrementally day by day, trying to inculcate the habits that you want to inculcate. And assume that it'll take you a number of months or even a number of years in order to become very fluent at the habit. The important thing is to start improving incrementally, because incremental improvement pays off like compound interest. And so I would also say that the trajectory that you're on is more important than your starting point. And that's also an extraordinarily optimistic observation, because it means that direction is more important than current position. And I mean, current position matters, obviously, but I don't think it does matter as much as direction. If you want to learn to concentrate more, define what constitutes concentration, break it into micro habits, and then start practicing instantiation of those micro habits.
Make a plan. Look at what you're interested in. Get disciplined about something. Allow for the possibility that you have something important to contribute to the world, and that the world would be a lesser place without that contribution. Don't be afraid of taking on responsibility. It's where you find what sustains you in your life. You can take on too much responsibility. You have to be cautious in that regard, but that's a less common problem than not taking on enough. A lot of the things that people regard as traps are actually the means to their life.
The unconscious contains habits, once voluntary, now automatized, and dissociated elements of the personality, which may lead a parasitic existence. That's an interesting one. I would relate that more to procedural memory. You know, so what you've done is practice certain habits, whatever they might be, let's call them bad habits, and you like those things to get under control, but you can't. So maybe when you're speaking, for example, you use like and you know, and you say a lot, and you've practiced that, so you're really good at it, and you'd like to stop it, but you don't get to, because you've built that little machine right into your being, right? It's neurologically wired, and it's not under conscious control, and anything you practice becomes that. It becomes part of you, and that's another element of the unconscious. My experience is with people that we're probably running at about 51% of our capacity. Something, I mean, you can think about this yourselves. I often ask undergraduates how many hours a day you waste or how many hours a week you waste. And the classic answer is something like 4 to 6 hours a day. You know, inefficient studying, watching things on YouTube that not only do you not want to watch, that you don't even care about, that make you feel horrible about watching after you're done. That's probably 4 hours right there. You know, you think, well, that's 20, 25 hours a week, it's 100 hours a month, that's 2.5 full work weeks, it's half a year of work weeks per year. And if your time is worth $20 an hour, which is a radical underestimate, it's probably more like 50 if you think about it in terms of deferred wages. If you're wasting 20 hours a week, you're wasting $50,000 a year. And you are doing that right now. And it's because you're young, wasting $50,000 a year is a way bigger catastrophe than it would be for me to waste it, because I'm not going to last nearly as long. And so if your life isn't everything it could be, you could ask yourself, well, what would happen if you just stopped wasting the opportunities that are in front of you? You'd be who knows how much more efficient, 10 times more efficient, 20 times more efficient. That's the Pareto distribution. You have no idea how efficient people get. It's completely, it's off the charts. Best thing you can do is teach people to write, because there's no difference between that and thinking. And one of the things that just blows me away about universities is that no one ever tells students why they should write something. It's like, well, you have to do this assignment. Well, why are you writing? Well, you need the grade. It's like, no. You need to learn to think, because thinking makes you act effectively in the world. Thinking makes you win the battles you undertake, and those could be battles for good things. If you can think and speak and write, you are absolutely deadly. Nothing can get in your way. So that's why you learn to write. It's like, and I can't believe that people aren't just told that. It's like, it's the most powerful weapon you can possibly provide someone with. And I know lots of people who've been staggeringly successful, and watched them throughout my life. I mean, those people, you don't want to have an argument with them. They'll just slash you into pieces. And not in a malevolent way. It's like, if you're going to make your point and they're going to make their point, you better have your points organized, because otherwise you are going to look like and be an absolute idiot. You are not going to get anywhere. And if you can formulate your arguments coherently, and make a presentation, if you can speak to people, if you can lay out a proposal, God, people give you money, they give you opportunities, you have influence. Make it a schedule and stick to it. Okay, so what's the rule with the schedule? It's not a bloody prison. That's the first thing that people do wrong. They say, well, I don't like to follow a schedule. It's like, well, what kind of schedule are you setting up? Well, I have to do this, then I have to do this, then I have to do this, you know, and then I just go play video games, because who wants to do all these things that I have to do? It's like, wrong. Set the schedule up so that you have the day you want. That's the trick. It's like, okay, I've got tomorrow. If I was going to set it up so it was the best possible day I could have, practically speaking, what would it look like? Well, then you schedule that. And obviously, there's a bit of responsibility that's going to go along with that, because if you have any sense, one of the things that you're going to insist upon is that at the end of the day, you're not in worse shape than you were than at the beginning of the day, right? Because that's a stupid day. If you have a bunch of those in a row, you just dig, you know, you dig yourself a hole and then you bury yourself in it. It's like, sorry, that's just not a good strategy. It's a bad strategy. So maybe 20% of your day has to be responsibility and obligation, or maybe it's more than that, depending on how far behind you are. But even that, you can ask yourself, okay, well, I've got these responsibilities. I have to schedule the things in. What's the right ratio of responsibility to reward? And you can ask yourself that, just like you'd negotiate with someone who is working for you. It's like, okay, you got to work tomorrow. Okay, so I want you to work tomorrow. And you might say, okay, well, what are you going to do for me that makes it likely that I'll work for you? Well, you could ask yourself that, you know. So maybe you do an hour of responsibility and then you play a video game for 15 minutes. I don't know, whatever turns your crank, man. But, you know, you have to negotiate with yourself and not tyrannize yourself like you're negotiating with someone that you care for, that you would like to be productive and have a good life. And that's how you make the schedule. It's like, and then you look at the day and you think, well, if I had that day, that'd be good. Great. You know, and you're useless and horrible, so you'll probably only hit it with about 70% accuracy, but that beats the hell out of zero, right? And if you hit it even with 50% accuracy, another rule is, well, aim for 51% the next week, or 50.5% for God's sake, or because you're going to hit that position where things start to loop back positively and spiral you upward. Well, and if we all got our act together collectively and stopped making things worse, because that's another thing people do all the time, not only do they not do what they should to make things better, they actively attempt to make things worse because they're spiteful or resentful or arrogant or deceitful or homicidal or genocidal or all of those things all bundled together in an absolutely pathological package. If people stopped really, really trying just to make things worse, we have no idea how much better they would get just because of that. So there's this weird dynamic that's part of the existential system of ideas between human vulnerability, social judgment, both of which are major causes of suffering, and the failure of individuals to adopt the responsibility that they know they should adopt. It isn't merely that your fate depends on whether or not you get your act together and to what degree you decide that you're going to live out your own genuine being. It isn't only your fate. It's the fate of everyone that you're networked with. And so, you know, you think, well, there's 9 billion, 7 billion people in the world. We're going to peak at about 9 billion, by the way, and then it'll decline rapidly. But 7 billion people in the world, and who are you? You're just one little dust mote among that 7 billion. And so it really doesn't matter what you do or don't do, but that's simply not the case. It's the wrong model because you're at the center of a network. You're a node in a network. Of course, that's even more true now that we have social media. You'll know 1,000 people at least over the course of your life, and they'll know 1,000 people each, and that puts you one person away from a million and two persons away from a billion. And so that's how you're connected, and the things you do, they're like dropping a stone in a pond. The ripples move outward and they affect things in ways that you can't fully comprehend. And it means that the things that you do and that you don't do are far more important than you think. And so if you act that way, of course, the terror of realizing that is that it actually starts to matter what you do. And you might say, well, that's better than living a meaningless existence. It's better for it to matter. But I mean, if you really asked yourself, would you be so sure if you had the choice? I can live with no responsibility whatsoever. The price I pay is that nothing matters. Or I can reverse it and everything matters. But I have to take the responsibility that's associated with that. It's not so obvious to me that people would take the meaningful path. Now, when you say, well, nihilists suffer dreadfully because there's no meaning in their life and they still suffer. Yeah, but the advantage is they have no responsibility. So that's the payoff, and I actually think that's the motivation. Say, well, I can't help being nihilistic. All my belief systems have collapsed. It's like, yeah, maybe. Maybe you've just allowed them to collapse because it's a hell of a lot easier than acting them out. And the price you pay is some meaningless suffering, but you can always whine about that and people will feel sorry for you, and you have the option of taking the pathway of the martyr. So that's a pretty good deal, all things considered, especially when the alternative is to bear your burden properly and to live forthrightly in the world. Well, what Solzhenitsyn figured out, and so many people in the 20th century, it's not just him, even though he's the best example, is that if you live a pathological life, you pathologize your society. And if enough people do that, then it's hell. Really. Really. And you can read the Gulag Archipelago if you have the fortitude to do that, and you'll see exactly what hell is like. And then you can decide if that's a place you'd like to visit, or even more importantly, if it's a place you'd like to visit and take all your family and friends, because that's what happened in the 20th century. No one can live without a routine. You just forget that. If you guys don't have a routine, I would recommend, like, you get one going, because you cannot be mentally healthy without a routine. You need to pick a time to get up, whatever time you want, but pick one and stick to it, because otherwise you dysregulate your circadian rhythms and they regulate your mood. Plan a life you'd like to have, and you do that partly by referring to social norms. That's more or less rescuing your father from the belly of the whale. But the other way you do that is by having a little conversation with yourself about, as if you don't really know who you are, because you know what you're like. You won't do what you're told. You won't do what you tell yourself to do. You must have noticed that. It's like you're a bad employee and a worse boss, and both of those work, you know, for you. You don't know what you want to do, and then when you tell yourself what to do, you don't do it anyways. You should fire yourself and find someone else to be. But you know, my point is that you have to understand that you're not your own servant, so to speak. You're someone that you have to negotiate with, and you're someone that you want to present the opportunity of having a good life to. And that's hard for people because they don't like themselves very much. So, you know, they're always like cracking the whip and then procrastinating, and cracking the whip and then procrastinating. And it's like, God, it's so boring and such a pathetic way of spending your time. I think what you have to do, and this is part of humility, is you have to look around you within your sphere of influence, like the direct sphere of influence, and fix the things that announce themselves as in need of repair. But one of the main reasons that people don't get what they want is because they don't actually figure out what it is. And the probability that you're going to get what would be good for you, let's say, which would even be better than what you want, right? Because, you know, you might be wrong about what you want easily. But maybe you could get what would really be good for you. Well, why don't you? Well, because you don't try. You don't think, okay, here's what I would like if I could have it. And I don't mean in a way that you manipulate the world to force it to deliver you goods for status or something like that. That isn't what I mean. I mean something like, imagine that you were taking care of yourself like you were someone you actually cared for. And then you thought, okay, I'm caring for this person. I would like things to go as well for them as possible. What would their life have to be like in order for that to be the case? Well, people don't do that. They don't sit down and think, all right, you know, let's figure it out. You've got a life. It's hard, obviously. It's like 3 years from now, you can have what you need. You got to be careful about it. You can't have everything. You can have what would be good for you, but you have to figure out what it is. And then you have to aim at it. Well, my experience with people has been is if they figure out what it is that would be good for them, and then they aim at it, then they get it. And it's strange because it's a strange thing. It's not quite that simple because, you know, you may formulate an idea about what would be good for you, and then you take 10 steps towards that and you find out that your formulation was a bit off. And so you have to reformulate your goal. You know, you're kind of going like this as you move towards the goal. But a huge part of the reason that people fail is because they don't ever set up the criteria for success. And so since success is a very narrow line and very unlikely, the probability that you're going to stumble on it randomly is zero. And so there's a proposition here, and the proposition is if you actually want something, you can have it. Now the question then would be, well, what do you mean by actually want? And the answer is that you reorient your life in every possible way to make the probability that that will occur as certain as possible. And that's a sacrificial idea, right? It's like, you don't get everything. Obviously. But maybe you can have what you need. And maybe all you have to do to get it is ask. But the asking isn't a whim or today's wish. It's like, you have to be deadly serious about it. You have to think, okay, like, I'm taking stock of myself. And if I was going to live properly in the world and I was going to set myself up such that being would justify itself in my estimation. And I don't mean as a harsh judge. Exactly what is it that I would aim at? Sit on your bed one day and ask yourself, what remarkably stupid things am I doing on a regular basis to absolutely screw up my life? And if you actually ask that question, but you have to want to know the answer, right? Because that's actually what asking the question means. It doesn't mean just mouthing the words. It means you have to decide that you want to know. You'll figure that out so fast it'll make your hair curl. Compare yourself to who you were yesterday and not to who someone else is today. And that's a game you can win, because you could be a little better today than you were yesterday. And that's a good thing. You're a little better. That's a good thing. And you know, no doubt there are some things that you could improve. You know, if you sit and meditate for any length of time about what you're not doing optimally, answers will spring to mind. You know, you could be getting up earlier. Comparing yourself to who you are now, that's a game you can win. Take stock of where you are. You know, what your advantages are and what your disadvantages are. And then you start with a little humility on the path of incremental improvement. And, you know, incremental improvement compounds. And so you can get a long ways. Trajectory, in some sense, is more important than position for human beings. I mean, if you're starving to death, that's not the situation that I'm describing. But, you know, if you've got the bare necessities of life, you're not surrounded by absolute privation. What you really want is to see that you're on an uphill path, you know, something that's got the right slope. And you can start anywhere on that path. And you can improve 0.5% a day or 0.25% a day. And you think, well, that's not very much. It's like it's 100% in 4 years. And that doesn't count compounding, you know, which means it's actually going to happen a lot faster. I think that the possibility that you can make yourself slightly better on a continual basis is, I think that's something that's accessible to everyone. I think that's equivalent to leading a virtuous life. And, you know, I talked about the terrible catastrophe in some sense of differences in intelligence and differences in conscientiousness and so forth, and the downside of the meritocracy. But there is something to be said for virtue and truth. You know, and that is one thing. Another thing that I've noticed about people who've been phenomenally successful is that they really do everything they can to live a truthful life. And that, you can get a bloody long ways by being honest. The first thing I think you need to understand is that these people that you're comparing yourself to, you don't really know very well. What that means is that you see their shiny outside, but you don't see the reality of their life. People have hard lives, and even people who are comparatively fortunate have hard lives. The ideal that you're observing that makes you jealous and resentful is in large part an illusion that's created by your own mind. You're quite different from other people, and you shouldn't be comparing yourself to them, because they're not like you. You know, they don't have your family. They don't have your temperament. They don't have your troubles. They don't have your abilities. The only person that has those is you. Compare yourself to who you were yesterday and not to who someone else is today. And see, that's a game you can win. Most creative people fail at producing their creative product and monetizing it. Right, so your default position, if you're a creative person, is you're going to fail. And so, and that's because it's hard to come up with something new, and it's hard to present it to the market at the right time, and it's hard to market it. Like, those things are really, really difficult. And so what successful entrepreneurs do is they just keep doing it over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And eventually, if they're fortunate, one of their ideas happens to hit the right place at the right time. And so that's also Darwinian in some sense. You know, you're creating all these little enterprises that are sort of alive. They're run by people, after all. And even if your idea is good, that doesn't mean it will be successful. There's so many things that have to be taken into account. So This is partly why persistence, and that's part of conscientiousness, is so useful. It's like, you know, what do they say? If at first you fail, then try again. And that would probably mean try something different rather than the same thing. But persistence is helpful because it enables you to run many, many experiments. And you need to know that the baseline is failure. You know, it's important because otherwise you'll blame that on yourself. You know, and some of that's useful because there's probably some things that you could improve about yourself. But it's very difficult to go from zero to one, you know. If you're starting out as a salesperson, for example, the hardest sale is the first customer. And then, you know, they get easier with each additional customer. Be careful who you share good news with, because you want to share good news with people who are going to be genuinely happy for you. And that's one way that you can identify those people who are truly on your side. Be careful who you share bad news with, because that's equally tricky. You know, you want someone who will listen to you when you're having trouble and allow you your grief, especially if it's a consequence of something tragic, and who won't try to one-up you, you know, because often when you're talking to people, they'll be thinking about what they have to say that's worse, and that's not helpful if you need a listening ear. Make one room in your house as beautiful as possible. I talked a lot about the necessity of cleaning your room, which is, you know, in some sense a foolish piece of advice because it seems so obvious, but it's not obvious at all. And you'll find if you try it, especially if you're in a household that's not very functional, that you'll encounter obstacles that you couldn't imagine existed while you're trying to put your life in order. And you can take your surroundings beyond order and move towards beauty, and that's unbelievably useful.
There's this saying that says, tough times produce strong men. Strong men produce good times. Good times produce weak men. Weak men produce tough times.
Yes.
If that's the truth, which phase are we in today?
Well, if you think about it historically, you have to say that we're in good times. I mean, that doesn't mean everything about the current times are good. And of course, life is always tenuous and difficult. But it's 1919. If you go back 100 years ago, imagine what the last 5 years would have been like, right? You would have been, the entire world was encapsulated in a terrible war. The trench warfare was absolutely brutal, and that was a five-year period. And then that was followed by the Spanish influenza, which killed 120 million people. And, you know, so I'd rather be here now than there then by a substantial margin. And I think life is never easy, even under relatively positive conditions. But I would say that, speaking on a global level, there's never been a better time for the majority of people to be alive. And the future, although we're vulnerable and terrible things can always happen to us, it's hard to make a case that the future doesn't look comparatively positive. We're becoming extremely technologically sophisticated, and the world is changing at an incredibly rapid rate, and the only way we're going to be able to manage that in a positive way is if each of us, or as many of us as possible, are capable of making wise and careful and truthful decisions. And if we do that, then, you know, maybe things can continue to improve. The rate of absolute poverty in the world has fell by 50% between the year 2000 and the year 2012. You know, that's the fastest rate of economic improvement in the history of the world. And there's plenty of reason to be optimistic if you're inclined in that direction. I would say it's best to marry that with a healthy dose of attentive caution because, well, as I said, things can go badly wrong. But I can't think of a time in the past that I would trade for now, despite all the problems that are also part and parcel of being alive now.
If you gaze into the abyss long enough, you see the light, not the darkness. I'm betting my life on it. Bring it on. The adventure along the route, man. And I would say, where's that adventure to be found? You don't want someone else's fate. Man, your fate's enough. And your adventure's enough. It's plenty. It's more than you can ever fully realize. And so that's also part of the reason that we all believe that the individual has some intrinsic dignity. It's don't be so sure that your position and your room is so damn trivial. It might be your attitude towards it that's trivial. And if you're in dire straits and dire circumstances, just look at how much opportunity you have to make things better. Well, maybe the same thing's true of life, right? You bind yourself to it. And that tighter you bind yourself to it, the more you find out what it is. And that's like a radical embrace. We're built to walk uphill. And when you reach the pinnacle of the hill, you want to stop and appreciate the vision. But the next thing you want is a higher hill in the distance, because it's from the uphill climb that we derive our value. Almost all the positive emotion we feel, especially the emotion that fills us with enthusiasm, that's experienced in relationship to a goal. And so in some sense, you want a goal that you can never attain.
There's nothing that makes you more formidable than verbal competence, than being able to articulate, be able to think, to marshal your arguments, right? Aim yourself in one direction. And you might say, well, I've gone halfway down this path and I found out it's wrong. Well, how do you distinguish that from just giving up? Well, that's a really hard question, right? It's a moral hazard. But then the absolute is, yeah, but you have to play one of them. You have to learn to play one of them. You have to become an expert at least one of them. And then that's not a relative proposition. And I believe that's true. So you want to commit to something. And then when you commit to something, you require yourself to bring all of your disparate components moving in a single direction, united in a single direction. So it's a unifying act.
Jordan Peterson is adamant about the importance of setting goals in life and the need to embrace the difficulty that comes with pursuing them. Peterson emphasizes that while it's acceptable to change your direction in life, it's essential not to make it easier for yourself. Instead, he suggests that it's crucial to challenge yourself continually and strive for greater accomplishments. He highlights the importance of goal setting as a powerful tool for personal growth and development, and encourages people to embrace the challenges that come with pursuing their dreams.
Because it's inappropriate to continue in a direction you now realize to be wrong, but it's also inappropriate to give up and use that rationalization as an excuse. And how do you distinguish?
Especially seeing as we're not transparent to ourselves.
Well, right, exactly. So that is genuinely a moral hazard. So one of the principles that I tried to abide by in my therapeutic discussions was, you can change course as long as the next thing you do is equally or more difficult. Because that's a check against just giving up. So you want to discipline yourself so you can get yourself organized so that you can go in a particular direction, so that when you find the right direction, you can really go in that direction. And that does require an apprenticeship of sorts. And it might not matter in some sense exactly what the apprenticeship is, as long as it is rigorous.
You want a goal that you can never attain, so you can always move closer to the goal that recedes as you move towards it. You think, well, that's frustrating. It's like Sisyphus pushing the rock uphill. But it's not, because as you pursue that goal, you put yourself together and your life does get better and richer and more abundant. And that's why the highest levels of virtue and goal are in some sense transcendent. You want them to be above everything you're doing so you can continually move towards something that's more sublime and better. That's what you are. You're here to live, not to sleep. And the problem with the vision of Mai Tais on the beach is that, well, first of all, that's a vision of drug-induced unconsciousness. Second, it's only going to work for about a week. Third, you're going to be a laughingstock in a month and depressed and aimless and goalless. It's you want a horizon of ever-expanding possibility. And so it does happen to people as they, because they've staked their soul on the attainment of an instrumental goal.
In addition to discussing the importance of setting goals and facing challenges, Jordan Peterson also suggests that it can be difficult to regulate negative emotions. Instead of trying to suppress or avoid these emotions, the best approach is to embrace them and continue facing challenges. It is through facing and overcoming challenges that we grow and develop as individuals. By embracing our negative emotions and using them to motivate us to take on difficult tasks, we can push ourselves to achieve more. Through this approach, one develops resilience and strength in the face of adversity, ultimately leading to greater personal growth and fulfillment.
It's a very difficult problem to solve, how to regulate negative emotion. But I would say that the best way we know is to keep facing challenges voluntarily, pay attention at a rate that works for you, develop your competence. That actually stabilizes the environment around you, so it actually is less predictable and less threatening. Plus, you accrue that evidence, and you get the social support for doing so. That's your best pathway forward.
You said that a harmless man is not a good man. A good man is a very dangerous man who has that under voluntary control. How should people become more dangerous?
Oh, becoming more articulate is definitely, I would say, that's the primary array of weapons. I mean, physical prowess is something, and it's not nothing, that physical confidence that comes along with that as well. But the same thing replicated at the level of the ability to communicate and to think, that's a way broader field of battle and opportunity.
In a world with seemingly infinite options, it can be challenging to decide on the best course of action for one's life. Pearson suggests that a useful approach is to focus on what bothers you or what you find most challenging. These discomforts or challenges can be an indication of where one should focus their time and energy. By leaning into what is difficult or uncomfortable, individuals can discover their strengths and find direction in their lives. Be honest with yourself about your interests, abilities, and limitations, and pursue the path that aligns most closely with your values and passions.
Well, the first question is, what bugs you? What's bugging you? This is such a cool thing. It's like, where is my destiny? Well, what bothers you? Well, that's where your destiny is. Your destiny is to be found in what bothers you. Why do those things bother you? There's a lot of things you could be bothered by. Like a million things, man. But some things grip you. They bug you. And they might make you resentful and bitter because they bug you so much. Like, they're your things, man. They've got you. So then I look for a question that I would like the answer to. I would really like the answer to it, so I don't assume I already have the answer, because I would actually really like to have the answer. So if I could get a better answer, great. And so that's the first thing. And that's like a prayer. It's like, okay, here's a mystery. I would like to delve into it further. Well, so that's humility. It's like, here's a mystery, which means I don't know. I would like to delve into it further, which means I don't know enough already. And then comes the revelation. It's like, well, what's a revelation? Well, if you ask yourself a question, it's a real question. Do you get an answer or not? The answer is, well, yeah, thoughts start to appear in your head. So
from somewhere.
That's right, from somewhere.
Where do they come from? Do you have a sense?
Depends on what you're aiming at. It depends on your intent. So imagine that your intent is to make things better. Then maybe they come from the place that's designed to make things better. Maybe your intent is to make things worse. Then they come from hell. And you think, not really. It's like, you're so sure about that, are
but
you?
Is your intent conscious? Like, are you able to introspect
with the
intent?
It's conscious and habitual, right? Because as you practice something consciously, it becomes habitual. But it's conscious. It's like when I sit down before I do a lecture, I think, okay, what's the goal here? To do the best job I can. To what end? Well, people are coming here not for political issues. They're coming here because they're trying to make their lives better. Okay, so what are we doing? We're conducting a joint investigation into the nature of that which makes life better. Okay, what's my role? To do as good a job about that as possible. What state of mind do I have to be in? Am I annoyed about the theater? Or am I clued in and thrilled that 4,000 people have showed up at substantial expense and trouble to come and listen to me talk? And if I'm not in that state of mind, I think, well, maybe I need something to eat, or maybe I need to talk to someone, because ingratitude is no place to start.
Our goal with this video was to share some of Jordan Peterson's most insightful advice and encourage you to use it to help achieve your own personal goals. Whether it's setting ambitious targets, embracing challenges, or focusing on what bothers you, Peterson's insights can help create a path that is fulfilling, purposeful, and unique to you. With perseverance, dedication, and a willingness to take on challenges, you can achieve more than you ever thought possible.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.